his life and to sacrifice his life in the defense of Islam and the message of Islam and the cause of Allah. Definitely something that we should think about is how much are we willing to invest for the Almighty Allah. A very comprehensive lesson brought to us by the universal persona of Imam Ali alayhi salam.
قال أمير المؤمنين علي عليه السلام: يا ابن آدم، إذا رأيت ربك سبحانه يتابع عليك نعمه وأنت تعصيه فاحذر.
Imam Ali, peace be upon him, said, O son of Adam, when you see that your Lord, the Glorified, bestows his favors on you, while you are disobeying him, you should fear him.
And now we invite you to listen to Sayyid Muhammad Rizvi.
Ali is the need of our time, the 20th century. We need him now. Look at even the United Nations when they issued this famous report about the socio-economic, you know, situation in the Arab world, about the development there. They actually emphasize to the Arabs that we are not asking you to follow the West. Go back to your own sources and your own books. And then they have a quotation, a passage from Nahjul Balagha, the letter that Ali wrote to Malik Ashtar. They said, look at that. He is from your world. And follow that. And so my message to us, especially this year, is that how much do we know about Ali? How much do you know about the sayings of Ali and the lectures which are there, the sermons which are there in Nahjul Balagha? You know, Shaheed Murtaza Mutahiri has a very good statement in his brief commentary on Nahjul Balagha, where he says, we are like the salesman of the perfume who goes around, you know, sells the perfume, gives them, this is the, you know, sample version of it, use on yourself. Spreads the fragrance around. But if you look at himself, there is no smell there. We go around and talk about Ali. But have we taken that ilm and wisdom and knowledge of Ali, rubbed it on ourselves or not? We don't need, you know, non-Muslims to appreciate Ali and write about Ali, study his ideas and thoughts and then present to us. And then we say, MashaAllah, you know, Christians are saying this about Ali. What about us? Let us make a commitment with Ali ibn Abi Talib tonight. That at least from now on, we'll pick up Nahjul Balagha. And if you don't want to buy, don't worry about it. Online version is free. Go to the last segment of Nahjul Balagha, the sayings. Short sayings there. Make a point of reading and studying and pondering on one saying per week. And this is where you will come to realize who is Ali. And you will get closer to him and his ideas and his expectation that he has from his followers, and especially from his Shia.
At this moment, we invite you to listen to parts of the Arabic text of Ziyarat Aminullah along with its English translations. Please stay tuned.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم اللهم فاستجب دعائي واقبل ثنائي واجمع بيني وبين أوليائي بحق محمد.
O Allah, give favorable answer to my prayer. Acknowledge the praise I sign in worship. Let there be peace and harmony between me and my friends for the sake of Muhammad, Ali, Fatima, Al-Hassan and Al-Hussein. Verily, thou art my benefactor who provides with bounties, the aim of my desires, the ultimate destination of my hopes in my future life and during this short life. Thou art my God, my Master and my Lord. Welcome my friends, keep our enemies away from us. To save us from the evil mischief, divert their attention. Let the true world come out in the open, supreme and dominant. Refute and condemn the fully, rendered contemptible. Verily, thou art able to do all things.
إنك على كل شيء قدير.
تمام ارزش‌ها و صفاتی که انسان چه به عنوان انسان مؤمن به اسلام چه به عنوان انسان مؤمن به هر دینی
human in general whether a muslim non-muslim or even a disbeliever respect the values present in the character of Ali ibn Abi Talib this means Ali ibn Abi Talib is a global character who is respected by Sunnis, Shias, and even non-Muslims. Everyone, even the faithless people, respect Imam Ali and his personal values.
Dear listeners, we hope you enjoyed this episode of To My Brother. Don't forget to visit our website at parstoday.ir/en Call of Islam page. We leave you in Allah's care. Bye for now.
Of Jalali Tehran.
Rubashavit Gaza.
Jerome Hughes, Brussels.
Saeed Puraza, London.
Rasha Saglam, Istanbul.
Saeed Amin Alami, Kabul.
Shahana Bhatt, Indian administered Kashmir.
Around the world with reporters.
In a significant diplomatic milestone, the Iranian President Ibrahim Raisi embarked on a three-day official visit to Pakistan, marking the first such visit by any foreign leader following the February 8 elections. Upon his arrival at the Prime Minister's house for a meeting with PM Shahbaz Sharif, the Iranian President was honored with a guard of honor by impeccably turned-out contingents of armed forces. The Pakistani Premier Shahbaz Sharif extended a warm welcome to the esteemed guest upon his arrival at the venue of the formal welcome ceremony. During a press conference, the visiting Iranian president emphasized the common ground shared by Islamabad and Tehran on various global issues, such as joint efforts against terrorism and addressing human rights violations in Palestine.
There are several common positions and stances between our two countries. For instance, when it comes to fighting against terrorism, both countries are determined to fight against terrorism, organized crime, narcotics and different forms and manifestations of insecurity that endanger our two countries and the region. Today we decided to increase economic, commercial and cultural relations between Pakistan and Iran, and both Pakistan and Iran have agreed to increase trade volume to $10 billion.
The Pakistani premier said that both Iran and Pakistan are resolute in their commitment to combat terrorism and other forms of insecurity that threaten not only our nations but also the broader region. The Pakistani premier thanked Iran for taking a strong stance against the oppression of Muslims in Gaza.
Security Council ki qarardad.
The resolution of Security Council regarding Palestine is still being flouted today. All Muslim countries should raise their voices unitedly until a complete ceasefire in Gaza.
The visiting Iranian president also met with his Pakistani counterpart Asif Ali Zardari and other top-ranking Pakistani officials. Pakistan and Iran said they will continue to promote their bilateral relations in diverse fields including security, political, economic, trade and culture.
The recent visit by the Iranian president to Pakistan underscores the close and fraternal ties between the two nations. Analysts say that this visit will serve to strengthen bilateral relations and foster greater people-to-people contacts between Islamabad and Tehran. Nasik Azmi, Islamabad.
Dozens of organizations marched in Paris against Islamophobia and racism as Israel's attempted genocide and ethnic cleansing has caused increased state-sponsored repression against Europe's largest Muslim community. A main theme of the march was protecting children. Since October 7th, children as young as 10 years old have been charged with so-called apology for terrorism, while a child of 8 was falsely targeted for praying during recess. Scandals like those have many saying that non-white children are no longer being treated like children, but instead like suspected fanatics, delinquents, and full-grown adults.
We Muslims are enduring so much Islamophobia these days, and it's not like there wasn't a lot of Islamophobia in France already. The targeting of our children is a step too far, and it's incredible that they have taken this shameful step.
As France is accused of targeting Muslim children at home, their elite are giving military and political cover to Israel's mass murder in Gaza of an estimated 15,000 children and the orphaning of some 20,000 others.
On les bombarde.
It's totally unjust how we are watching murder, torture and the bombing of embassies, and nobody is allowed to say anything. We're here to say stop the violence against Palestinian and Iranian people.
A decade ago, during another Israeli invasion of Gaza, France became the first country to ever ban pro-Palestinian demonstrations. They banned pro-Palestinian demonstrations for a month after the counterattack by Hamas on October 7th, handing out hundreds of thousands of euros in fines and making mass arrests. Police initially banned this march, claiming it was a threat to public order and possibly anti-Semitic. That was overturned at the last moment, but many say the effort is proof of a long-running double standard against non-whites and non-Jews.
C'est des antisémites. Ça, c'est n'importe quoi.
Anytime there is a march about Palestine or Islamophobia, the interior minister in whatever administration seeks to ban it. The idea that we are anti-Semitic is total nonsense. I get the feeling that I'm more French than many others who aren't of Algerian descent as I am, because many have totally abandoned the longtime values of French political culture.
Similar to during France's two-year state of emergency starting in November 2015, many have been shocked by the lack of outcry at this latest targeting of the Muslim community, despite perpetual bragging of being the alleged birthplace of human rights.
Ramin Mazahiri, Paris.
After almost 3 days, the Israeli forces withdrew from the refugee camp of Nur Shams near the city of Tul Karim in northern occupied West Bank. Only then paramedics were able to evacuate the martyrs' bodies and the families were able to count their dead. Over a dozen Palestinians have been killed since Thursday, but the number might be higher as reports suggest that Israeli forces had confiscated the bodies of more martyrs. On Sunday, a comprehensive general strike was declared across the occupied West Bank to mourn Tul Karim martyrs. Scores of Palestinians also held a protest in the center of Ramallah against Israel's escalation and violence in Tul Karim and Nur Shams refugee camp.
Israel is expanding its genocide into the West Bank as well. And as we said before, there is no safe place for any Palestinian. And there has to be immediate Palestinian unity to stand up to this terrible aggression. And there has to be international boycott, divestment, sanctions campaign worldwide. And there has to be condemnation.
It's obvious that the Palestinian people, leadership and factions have to declare an immediate comprehensive popular uprising all over the Palestinian territories until the Israeli occupation ends. The ongoing war of attrition is no longer useful, but what's necessary is a national popular uprising.
The Israeli invasion has caused some of the worst destruction in the West Bank in decades. The occupation forces destroyed infrastructure, including sewage lines, shops, homes, and vehicles. Homes were turned into interrogation centers, and dozens of Palestinians were arrested. According to locals, heavy exchange of fire and clashes took place between resistance fighters and Israeli soldiers during the operation. The Israeli military admitted that at least 9 of its soldiers were wounded.
The Israeli occupation regime is escalating its violence against the Palestinian people. Its crimes are meant to exterminate the Palestinian people. In Gaza, genocide is being committed, and here in the West Bank, there are daily incursions, murders, collective punishment, and destruction everywhere. The Israeli occupation is doing its utmost to either bring Palestinians to their knees or commit more aggression and crimes against them.
Sunday's general strike paralyzed all aspects of life in the West Bank, with shops, schools, universities, and banks shuttered. But Palestinians question whether such a standstill is enough, expressing fear that once the Israeli military is done with Gaza, the occupied West Bank could be next. The Israeli military's violence against Palestinians is aimed at countering resistance, people here say. This is part of the Israeli crackdown on armed groups in the occupied West Bank. However, Palestinians say the Israeli crimes, including in the Nur Shams refugee camp, have failed to weaken their determination. Mona Kandil, occupied Ramallah.
A two-day international forum dubbed What Future for Palestine kicked off in Rome on Saturday. The initiative, organized by an opposition group called Front of Dissent, has been put together to tackle different topics, namely Zionism, its impact on Palestine and West Asia, the nature of Israel, what changes for the Palestinian resistance after October 7, West Asia in its transition to a multipolar world, and the risk of the Ukraine war escalating into a global conflict. The conference was attended by citizens who are very concerned about the turn the situation has taken in Western countries.
Today's forum is an important attempt to break down the wall of silence surrounding Zionist wrongdoings in West Asia. It is appalling how our mainstream media are covering Israel's brutal war in Gaza. They have created a parallel world and a parallel truth with the aim of covering up the bad things Israel is doing.
The superpowers that support Zionism are former colonial powers, most of them. And they had a role in creating Zionism in the first place. Many people allowed the Zionists to really empower themselves. So they were originally empowered by people who probably had a sense of guilt about the Holocaust, but eventually they became so powerful that they are able to control so many media outlets. They are able to control many politicians.
Speakers at the conference included former diplomats, politicians, journalists and activists from several countries, including China, the US, Britain, Russia and many others. Video links were also established with the spokesman for the worldwide anti-Zionist religious group, Neturei Karta International. Analysts at the conference are saying that the aftershocks of the Gaza crisis triggered by Israeli genocidal war are highly likely to reach far beyond West Asia and the Africa region, with the US credibility as a regional security guarantor shot to pieces. West Asia might see increased diplomatic engagement from China and Russia.
Turkish President Recep Tayyip Erdogan received the head of the Hamas Political Bureau, Ismail Haniyeh, in Istanbul. During the meeting that lasted for more than 2.5 hours, the two sides discussed the Israeli aggression on Gaza, ways and measures to ensure uninterrupted and sufficient delivery of humanitarian aid to Gaza, and a lasting peace in the West Asia region. During the meeting, President Erdogan stated that amid ongoing tensions in the region, it is important to keep the world's attention on Gaza and not allow the Israeli regime to achieve political gains from its standoff with Iran. In a statement published by the Turkish presidency, Erdogan said, "It is vital that Palestinians act with unity in this process. The strongest response to Israel and the path to victory lie in unity and integrity."
Today's meeting was very important for both Turkey and Hamas to set ground for the upcoming changes. We all know now Qatar is hosting Hamas Bureau and leaders as well as playing the role of mediator in negotiations with Israel. While there is a pressure from Washington for Hamas to leave Qatar, and there is the question of where will Hamas go now, we know that the relation of Hamas and Syria is getting better, and it already has a good relation with Iran. But I don't think they are a choice, and for that, Turkey will be the best option.
Analysts say Turkey will not only be hosting Hamas movement leaders and bureau, but will also take the lead in mediating to reach a lasting solution for the Palestinian-Israeli conflict.
Turkey is trying to play a very important role that is bigger than working on reaching a ceasefire in Gaza. It is rather solving the Israeli-Palestinian conflict and trying to reach a lasting solution. The 7th of October was a turning point to start working on reaching a lasting solution, and I think Turkey's role is a key for it to maintain good relations with all sides.
Hamas had an office in Turkey since 2011, and Turkey mediated in exchange of prisoners. Turkish president maintains warm relations with Haniyeh and says he will always defend the Palestinian cause. Today's meeting takes place against the backdrop of Qatar potentially stepping back from ceasefire talks. This development could create a vacancy that Ankara is well positioned to fill, given Turkey's established relations, particularly with the Hamas movement, which many view as a strategic advantage. Rashan Saglam, Istanbul.
According to the Palestinian Ministry of Health, more than 70% of the fatalities of the brutal Israeli aggression against the Gaza Strip are children and women. Likewise, according to reports issued by the Euro-Mediterranean Center for Human Rights, women and children in Gaza are enduring displacement, death, pain, and suffering in a way that the human mind cannot bear. More than 80% are living in tents without the minimum basic needs to live, without water, without food, with a chilling cold. The current situation is pushing them to the limit, making it impossible to focus on anything but survival.
Today, innocent civilians are placed in inhumane conditions which do not possess the most basic requirements for human survival. When it comes to children and women, the suffering becomes more painful because women's needs are greater. Women today live in tents. There is no bathroom. There is no toilet. They cannot take care of themselves. They have to stand in long lines in front of men's bathrooms, and this means double suffering. Also, do not forget pregnant women or those who gave birth during the attack. We're talking about an aggression that affects all vital aspects.
Pregnant women and those who have given birth in the midst of war are one of the most affected groups. Similarly, the United Nations Population Fund estimated that since the beginning of the Israeli aggression on the Gaza Strip, approximately 60,000 women are pregnant, and of them, 5,500 would give birth soon, many of them by cesarean section. This means that terrible hospital sanitary conditions, as well as the food crisis, will endanger their lives and the lives of newborn babies.
Pregnant women are suffering from extreme cold, food shortages and medicine shortages. We have noticed an increase in the rate of spontaneous abortions, an increase in the rate of premature births, and an increase in cases of small fetuses. Pregnant women leave the hospital about 10 hours after giving birth and go to the tents, where they have no means of living. Newborn babies are exposed to many diseases. We have observed that a large percentage of these women return to the hospital with their children who have caught a cold, and some have also died.
The lack of hygiene and high levels of malnutrition experienced in overcrowded refugee camps are a poisonous mixture. According to the World Food Program, there is a high risk of famine, and cases of dehydration and malnutrition are increasing rapidly. Many mothers say they only eat once a day to survive. However, there are children who have stopped talking or eating because of what they have seen and experienced. Others cry and scream with every loud sound they hear. Months of war have traumatized an entire generation of children.
You see the atmosphere. Making bread is suffering. To go to the bathroom, you have to wait in line. To get water and foods, you also have to wait in line. That is, our entire life is suffering. In the tent where I live, there are approximately 8 people and my daughter, her husband, and her daughter as well. That is 13 people in just 9 square meters. We have to make the bread here, you see, and if we don't find cardboard to light the fire, we can't bake the bread. We only have 1 bottle of water a day and food. If they give us help, we eat. And if they don't give us food, no, because the price of goods is multiplied by 10.
The suffering we experience as children is that we have been forced out of our homes. Our houses were bombed when we were inside it. My friend, who was my cousin, has died. All my friends have died, and I have no one left. Our childhood has been stolen from us. I want to go back to my house. I want the war to end and return home so I can rest.
Gazans continue to call for Israel to fulfill its obligations under international humanitarian law, which begins with the protection of civilian lives. They assure that all they want is the end of this nightmare full of death and pain. Palestinian women have always been the symbol of the strong law of resistance. However, displacement, hunger, and lack of health care due to the Zionist war are disproportionately affecting women. They claim that even their dignity has been lost. And for that reason, they will never forget, and they will take revenge for these violations and the misery they are in just because of the Zionist regime. Huda Hejazi, Gaza, Palestine.
Sheikh Baqir Sharif Al-Qarashi decides to compile.
So we can consider Sayyid Hadi Khosro Shahi.
Shahid Muhammad Baqir al-Sadr. He was born in Qadamiya.
The first and the most important thing that we can learn from Allama Tabatabai is his great effort.
In this regard, I should like to say that one of the great benefits of the late Ayatollah Sayyid Mahmoud Shahruddin was.
When we say Divan of Hafiz is a book of Irfan.
Mawlavi claims that this Masnavi Ma'navi is the interpretation of the Quran.
Be more familiar with outstanding Shia figures in the teacher.
مُعَلِّمٌ
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم السلام عليكم dear listeners of IRIB English Radio Call of Islam page well, welcome to another episode of the program The Teacher An introduction into the lives and thoughts of the most outstanding Muslim Shia dignitaries, personalities and ulama. I am Atta, the host of this program. With me in the studio, I have two special guest speakers from the Islamic House of Qom, Shaykh Rouhani and Shaykh Fadai. Shaykh Rouhani, assalamu alaikum, brother.
Alaykum assalam wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
And Shaykh Fadai, assalamu alaikum.
Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah.
For today's discussion, we want to talk about an outstanding Shiite faqih, a thinker, an alim, and a scholar. He is no one but Shaheed Muhammad Baqir Assad. You know, politically, socially, and religiously speaking, he was an outstanding man. He had so much positive effects in the mainstream studies of the Hausa of Iraq, and his political thoughts really helped very much in order to have a better understanding of an Islamic establishment or government. Before getting to more details of his life, Shaykh Rouhani gave us some information about the early life and biography of Shaheed Sayyid Muhammad Baqir Assad.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Sayyid Muhammad Baqir Assadr was born in 1313 and passed away in 1359. He was among the great jurists and thinkers and philosophers and the Islamic world. Of course, he was among the disciples of Ayatollah Sayyid Abul Qasim al-Khoi, and he studied in Najaf al-Ashraf. Yeah. Among his great students, we can mention the names of Sayyid Muhammad Sadr, Sayyid Muhammad Baqir al-Hakim, Sayyid Kazim Ha'iri, and Sayyid Hashimi Shahrudi, who are among the great scholars of the Tashayyu in the contemporary, time. According to his early life, we can mention that he was born in the city of Qadhimain, and his father was Sayyid Haydar Sadr al-Amili, and his mother was daughter of Abdul Hussein Ali Yasin.
Yes.
Of course, his grandfather, Sayyid Ismail al-Sadr, was among the great Maraji of the Shayyu in the 14th century, according to the Qamari calendar.
Yes.
And of course, he is among the offspring of the Imam al-Kadhim, alayhi salatu wassalam. It is said that Muhammad Baqir al-Sadr lost his father when he was only 3 years old, and his brother Sayyid Ismail Sadr was also among the great scholars who taught him at the beginning or the early life of this great scholar.
That's right.
Yes, these are the points that you can mention regarding the great Ayatollah right. Sayyid Muhammad Baqir al-Sadr.
Okay, thank you very much.
Shaheed Ayatollah Baqir al-Sadr, in the words of Imam Khamenei.
مرحوم آیت الله صدر بدون شک یکی از چهره‌های برجسته جهان اسلام بود. صرفاً یک روحانی نبود، یک مجتهد فقط نبود، بلکه یک امیدی بود برای آینده اسلام و به خصوص برای
Late Ayatollah Baqir Sadr was undoubtedly one of the most eminent figures of the Islamic world. He was not merely an Islamic scholar. He was not just a mujtahid. Rather, he was a spark of hope for the future of Islam, and especially for the future of Iraq and its people. He was one of those unique personalities who possessed the knowledge of Islamic jurisprudence along with new thought and creativity in different matters, and courage as well as honesty and taqwa. I met him in the year 1957, which is 30 years ago, in Najaf. He was a young man at that time, 24 to 25 years old. And in that very age, this man was famous in his grace and mastery in the principles of Islam and jurisprudence. I would wonder how it was possible for a young man of this age to be appreciated by the intellectual, but he was. We used to hear from several individuals in those days that he is a strong mujtahid. And I think in those very days, one of these two books, perhaps Falsafatuna, Our Philosophy, he had either written or published it, or it was said that he had written it and it is about to be published. Something like that. I still remember overall, he was such an eminent figure in the academic scholarly arena. At the same time, he was well known for his taqwa and honesty as well. He was well known as a religious and pious figure as well as a charming youth in the Islamic seminary of Najaf. And this individual had continuously worked for years on his aptitude, knowledge, and manners as well as taqwa. He had been preaching. He had brought up mentored students. He had done political and organizational work. He had gotten involved in the political issues of Iraq. He had understood and comprehended the global political issues of the Islamic world.
IRIB English Radio. Our website is parstoday.ir.
You can email us at englishradio@irib.ir. La ilaha illallah.
La ilaha illallah.
So all in all, he belongs to a scholarly family.
Yes,
Shaykh Rouhani. Yes. I mean, even his sister, Shahida Bintul Huda Assad, was among the scholarly women of her time. You know, unfortunately, she got martyred too, along with Muhammad Baqir Assad. We'll talk more about his martyrdom too. But Shaykh Fadai, let's get to you, brother. Let's talk a little bit about his scholarly life. Shahid Baqir Assad is called as one of the masterminds, or it's better to say genius, it's better to say, scholars of his time. The effects that he had, especially with compilation of so many outstanding books and references in the Shia studies, is really outstanding. Let's talk a little bit about his scholarly life and how his ideas, I mean, politically speaking, were rooted in the Islamic thoughts.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Of course, we had a lot of scholars during Islamic history, but just a few of them, we can say that even now we have their thoughts and we have their books as the main books of our Hausa. Shahid said was like that. When we check his books like Falsafatuna, Iqtisaduna, Durusun fi Ilm al-Usul, even now in the Hausa of Najaf and Hausa of Qom, these books are taught.
Yes.
And the main reason for that is the new theories that he had mm-hmm. in those books. For example, if you want to just call some of the theories, and if you have time,
very
we can
good.
Talk
yes,
about
yes,
some time. Of them.
Yes.
For example, the theory of Mansaqatul Faraq.
Yes.
In the Ilm of Usul, yes. Principles of Jurisprudence. For example, the theory of Mansaqatul Faraq in the book Iqtisaduna.
Yes.
About the economy and the theory of Haqqutta'a in Usul,
yes.
Principles of Jurisprudence, yeah. And the theory of Tawalud al-Zati,
yes.
In the book Al-Usasul Mantiqiyya lil-Istighra. These three theories, even now scholars are talking about them. Mm-hmm. Some of them agree, some disagree. And for example, in Mantaqatul Faraq,
yes.
We can say that we have a rule in Usul called Asalatul Bara'ah.
Yes.
It means sometimes we know what is the order of God.
Mm-hmm.
We are sure about that, whether it is halal or haram. But sometimes there are some choices that we're not sure about the order of God.
Mm-hmm.
And when we are not sure whether God has any order or not, usually the Usuli scholars and Fuqaha, they believe that because we are not sure whether there is an order or not, mm-hmm. We can be free, okay. Doing nothing.
Okay.
Because I'm not sure that my master, my God, had any order or not. This is called Asalatul Bara'ah.
Mm-hmm.
It means the main idea is that you don't have any order unless it is proved.
You mean religiously speaking, there is no law or ruling about the specific cases, isn't
yes,
it?
Yes, if there isn't uh-huh. a specific rule, and we're not sure whether God okay. has any special order in okay. that case or not.
Then whose responsibility is this?
Yes, the main idea before Shahid yes. said, usually the scholars believe that when you're not sure about the order of God, you can be free, doing
okay.
nothing.
Okay.
There isn't an order
okay.
unless you're sure. But Shahid said, believe that when there isn't any special order, Wali al-Faqih. And when we say Hakim al-Shahid, we have two terms, Hakim al-Shahid and Wali al-Faqih. And some believe that these are two terms. But if you believe in Walayat al-Faqih,
yes.
the ones who believe in Walayat al-Faqih theory, they believe that these two are together. They are just okay. One term.
Mm-hmm.
Wali al-Faqih, he had the authority to decide about that.
Uh-huh.
Why? You know, because our religion is not some kind of mortal religion. Mm-hmm. It is eternal.
Yes.
So, when the religion is eternal, it means it has to have order for every cases.
Yes.
So, what about the new cases, modern cases, which didn't exist in the time of Prophet sallallahu alaihi wa alayhi wa sallam? Mm-hmm. So, in this case, Wali al-Faqih has the authority to think about that. It
yes.
doesn't mean that religion doesn't have any order.
Okay.
Religion has a problem.
Okay.
No, that is the strength of mm-hmm. religion. To have order for every cases, mm-hmm. but via the authority of Wali al-Faqih.
So this jurist guardian, you know, who is called Wali al-Faqih, you know, must be capacitated enough, he must
yes.
have enough knowledge in order to deduct
yeah.
and reason about the new rulings, about the new occasions that are taking place.
In fiqh and jurisprudence, we
yes.
say that we have mawzu and hukm.
Yes,
mawzu
right.
is the case.
Yes.
And hukm is the rule.
Yes.
When we say Wali Faqih is the one mm-hmm. who knows all the rules and hukm completely, and who knows the mawzu and the cases completely.
Mm-hmm.
If he is not aware of the new cases, modern issues, he cannot have the authority to decide about that.
Yes.
But if he is aware, alim, al-alamu bizamaneh,
yes.
It means who is aware of every cases in his time, he can decide about that. So that was a new theory that Shahid
yes, okay.
said,
yes.
Wrote it in his book, Iqtisaduna.
That's right.
And now most of the scholars mm-hmm. believe that. And mm-hmm. of course, some
yes.
disagree. But because the book and the author
yes.
and the theory is so important,
yes.
we're talking about it. No one ignores that.
Thank you very much, Sheikh Fadai and Sheikh Rouhani, for a nice elaboration regarding the life account of Shahid Muhammad Baghir al-Thad. He was assassinated and killed on April 5th, 1980. As you said, his body was taken in secret, you know, it's better to say cemetery or burial place, and that's all right. But in 1427, according to the Hijra calendar, his body and his grave was again taken into the entrance of the holy city of Najaf. Today is the visiting place of so many of the visitors from all across the world. May Allah bless the soul of Shahid Sayyid Muhammad Baghir al-Asad and Shahida Bintul Huda Asad. It was very kind of Sheikh Fadai and Sheikh Rouhani, and thank you very much, dear listeners, for listening to this episode of the program The Teacher. For more information, visit our website at parspirit.ir, Call of Islam page. To another episode, God bless you all. Fi amanallah.
Everyone has a beloved, a new dear friend. But I have you, my dear. God protect you, my dear. May God protect you.
IRIB English Radio, for those who seek the truth.
علي حبه جنة وسيم النار والجنة وسي المصطفى حقا إمام الناس والجنة.
The Gate of Knowledge, exegesis and interpretations of the supremely eloquent sermons, letters and sayings of the Commander of the Faithful, Imam Ali ibn Abi Talib, peace be upon him.
You are listening to the program Gate of Knowledge on IRIB English Radio with Sheikh Mukhtar, a graduate of Islamic Seminary of Qom.
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم الحمد لله رب العالمين الصلاة والسلام على سيدنا محمد وعلى أهل بيته الطيبين الطاهرين. Dear listeners to IRIB English Radio, Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. I welcome you all to this episode of The Gate of Knowledge, where we are discussing about the topic of a guide for managers based on the teachings of Imam Ali alayhi salam in Nahjul Balagha. We are currently focusing on the sermon number 201 in Nahjul Balagha, which is a very short but beautiful sermon. We will pick up a few phrases from it and discuss about certain points that are going to enrich our topic and give us an insight into how we can be as managers and how we can take inspiration from Islam for good management. In the previous session, we discussed about the fact that managers and people in authority, especially in the government, they need to be careful not to be worldly in nature and not to be extravagant and not to, for instance, be corrupt and plundering of resources, and should not plunder the resources, especially the government resources, because this will cause people to turn away from the system. And especially if you are managing a body and you are misusing and misappropriating the funds of that body, you will be a source of people getting disenchanted from that system, and in fact they will completely get disconnected. So we need to be aware of that as managers. This is taken from an inspiration from Imam Ali alayhi salam.
You are listening to the program Gate of Knowledge on IRIB English Radio, a program that presents a detailed commentary of Peak of Eloquence from the Master of the Faithful, Imam Ali, peace be upon him.
Now, we are going to discuss another important matter today, and that is taking a lesson from sermon number 201 of Nahjul Balagha. However much we discuss about Nahjul Balagha, about the beauty, about the splendor, about the eloquence and the sheer majesty of the book and the power that is encapsulated by each and every word, will not be doing justice. And therefore, I would leave that to people of more knowledge. But I would like to discuss this phrase which Imam Ali alayhi salam mentions. He says, أَيُّهَا النَّاسُ لَا تَسْتَوْحِشُوا فِي طَرِيقِ الْهُدَى لِقِلَّةِ أَهْلِهِ. He says, O people, do not be afraid, do not be scared in the path of guidance when you have few people in that path. That means if you are few but you are in the direction of guidance, then do not be afraid. This is a powerful statement really, and it shows and gives hope to the people of truth and gives them strength. Now I would like to build up our discussion here and say that, see, you, a manager needs to be able to give hope to his people, to the people that are working with him always. And he should, for example, remind people that at times, because of their steadfastness on the truth, they will probably become alone. They will not have people supporting them. But mind you, this is in itself not a positive thing. When you cut it off from the other factors, that means being alone in everything, and let's say being separate from everyone, is not the best thing at all times. Because sometimes it may happen that the people around you are speaking the truth and they are doing the right thing, but you wish to, to be separate from them for some personal reasons. This is wrong. Imam Ali alayhi salam is saying that if you become alone, because of what? Because of being in the right path, then do not fear. So this is the point that we need to keep in mind here, very importantly.
Allahumma salli ala Muhammadin wa ali Muhammad.
Nahjul Balagha, translated as the Peak of Eloquence, is a compilation of sermons, letters and sayings that reflected Imam Ali's profound insights on governance, ethics, spirituality and social justice. Sayyid Razi's meticulous work in preserving and presenting Imam Ali's words has made Nahjul Balagha a timeless source of inspiration for scholars, theologians and seekers of wisdom.
Now, we're discussing this phrase where Imam Ali alayhi salam tells the people, Ayyuhan nas, O people, do not be afraid in the path of guidance because of the few people that exist in that path. If you're doing the right thing and you have really sincerely found out that your path is true, through the right means of approaching knowledge and understanding the realities of the universe and of the realities of the truth and falsehood that exist in this world, then do not be afraid, do not get worried. This is a very clear statement from Imam Ali alayhi salam. Says, La tastawhishu. Do not feel alone. Do not feel a state whereby you feel you are lonely and there is no one for you. Do not feel like that. And then he tells the reason behind it. He says, why do people become alone sometimes when they're in the right path? He says, because فَإِنَّ النَّاسَ قَدْ اجْتَمَعُوا عَلَى مَائِدَةٍ. Because the rest of the people that are involved, that you live with, or let's say that are in that society, or no, they are in another society and you are a society that follows the truth, or no, it's another country and you are a country that follows the truth, and you become alone in the whole world, let's say, as a country, as a society. Why do you become alone when you are in the right path? It's because the other group of people have set around a table. فَإِنَّ النَّاسُ قَدْ اجْتَمَعُوا عَلَى مَائِدَةٍ. They've set around the table, distributing some food amongst themselves and enjoying a banquet. Now, what is this banquet? Is it really a good banquet? In a simple terms, this is the banquet of the world. Now I'll explain to you what the world is and what it means here in this particular phrase of Imam Ali alayhi salam. We pray to Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala that He gives us the courage and the ability to learn the teachings of Ahlul Bayt and apply them in our lives. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
You just listened to the program Gate of Knowledge on IRIB English Radio with Sheikh Mukhtar, a graduate of Islamic Seminary of Qom.
قال النبي محمد من كنت مولاه هذا علي سيد فاز من ولاه هو بالكتاب مسدد والنور معناه باب العلوم ومرشد هو آيات الله من ناداه أو لبه حين دعاه نال مناه هو في الشدائد منجد والفضل يمناه هو في المحاسن أحمد والوحي رباه.
True Promise. This was the code name of a retaliatory military action by Iran against Israel. On Saturday, April 13th, Iran's IRGC unleashed massive aerial assaults on Israeli positions from its own soil. The widespread operation, which lasted hours, deployed over 300 drones, cruise missiles, and ballistic missiles. The strike came in response to the Israeli regime's attack on the consular building of the Islamic Republic's embassy in the Syrian capital of Damascus on April 1st. The attack came as a blatant violation of all international conventions, especially the Geneva and Vienna conventions. Seven Iranian military advisors, including several top IRGC commanders, were killed in the airstrike. Brigadier General Mohammad Reza Zahedi, a commander of IRGC Quds Force, and his deputy General Mohammad Hadi Haji Rahimi were among those killed in the attack on the consular section of the Iranian embassy in Damascus. The Iranian military advisors are in Syria for more than a decade, at the official invitation of the Syrian government to help fight Takfiri groups, including Daesh terrorists, which ironically enough have never attacked Israel. This has given rise to speculations that the Israeli regime is helping terrorists to destabilize the sovereign countries in the West Asian region. The regime is already accused of supporting the terrorists in Syria. Back in 2014, a controversial video showed top Israeli officials, including Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu, visiting Syrian militants wounded in the battle with government forces. Footage clearly showed how Israel was quietly cultivating ties with terrorists in Syria, providing medical care and other unidentified supplies to them. The April 1st strike by Israel targeting Iranian military advisors in Syria was not unprecedented. The regime has a long history of killing Iranian commanders, which is seen as part of its desperate attempts to undermine resistance movements in the region. Israel has also assassinated several Iranian scientists and launched sabotage attacks against Iran's nuclear facilities in recent years. Shortly after the Israeli strikes on April 1st, the leader of Iran's Islamic Revolution, Ayatollah Khamenei, announced that the Zionist regime would pay a price. The barrage of Iranian missiles and drones targeted a large intelligence base in